It's 10 a.m.
Wake up time!
And you're listening to Utah's most listened to sports radio show. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G. Presented by WCF Insurance. Reminding you to be careful out there. On 97.5 1280 The Zone in the Zone Sports Network.
For all the sickness to go gone, because I wanted to play with my friends.
Hello, beautiful difference makers. You are loved. I have full faith in you that you are a world changer, that you are the light of the world, and that you're going to just make a beautiful difference in this one day. Let it be extravagant. Let it be bold. I love you guys.
Time to make the donuts. Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Both of these are both these for me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those no, are, stop it.
Yeah. Those are both yours. And I got you half of a California burrito, too.
You know I'm not a hugger, but I could hug you right now.
It's Friday. Lloyd, Scotty, we made it to Friday.
Hey, go give him a hug. Go give him one.
I'll give him one in the break. I'm gonna give him a big bear hug. You know, nothing says brotherhood like a piggyback ride. Maybe I'll jump on your back. You can give me a piggyback ride around the concourse out here.
See, look, here's I gave you like, let's just do like one of those handshake yeah. arm around the yeah. shoulder kind of bro hug.
Yeah, those
that's
are
what nice. I was talking about. We didn't need to go from that to piggyback rides.
Do you remember the piggyback bandit?
No.
Do you remember the piggyback bandit?
It sounds familiar.
Remember, he was the guy that would go to college basketball games and just jump on people's back for a piggyback ride?
Oh, yeah, until he completely wrecked somebody's back.
You don't remember that guy?
No, I have no recollection of that at all.
Oh, man, we might have to bring that back in Whole World News tonight or today. I feel like I was just here, buddy.
Yeah, long night for you.
It was fun, man. You know how much fun those are.
Well, I'm glad you got to enjoy a good W, too. Like, just a really good, yeah. convincing, really didn't see that one coming, at least them winning that game going away, kind of a W. That third quarter was very extremely impressive.
Extremely impressive, and it was a fun night. This arena is so much fun. I mean, even just with the 5,500 fans that are in here, is that what we're at now, 5,500?
I believe so, yeah.
It is a blast. They do a good job. They make a large amount of noise, and the environment's incredible, and I sent a message to somebody that I know pretty well that understands supply and demand a little bit in this arena, and I just said, do you think that this could be sold out soon? Not as far as would it be allowed
yeah.
to, but could it be if it was allowed to? And this individual just said, oh, yeah, yeah. People are chomping at the bit. They really do want to come in and see this Jazz team. And I agree with that. I think that this team is – so, Scotty, you know I don't miss a game. I know you don't miss a game.
Nope.
We watch every single game. And I've watched what are you, 50-some-odd games now? I've watched
– what, 39 and 13? So what, 52 games?
So 52 games. So I've watched 50 – I've watched 48 of those on the TV.
Yeah.
And I've had a chance to watch just a handful in person. This team in person is different. It's a different experience. It is full-on entertainment to watch their speed and their length, to watch their athleticism, to watch the hustle last night and watch it, you know, right up close. It's just a different experience. This Jazz team is a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and it's not as if I was like, because you and I both predicted, you knew I wasn't feeling good about that game
not
against Phoenix.
No.
Like, it just didn't feel good. It didn't have a good feel to it.
I know you felt good about this game.
But I felt really good about
that
game.
I know you did.
And I don't know why.
You told me like eight times.
I probably shouldn't have. Because part of me last night, you know, and it kind of put some thoughts together before I watched the game. I'm like, okay, if they lose this game, you know, how are we going to address this on the show? What am I going to talk about? And part of me is thinking, you know what? Like, if they lose this game, I don't know if we should bang on them too much. I mean, that's a big ask.
I know.
To play a really emotional overtime game and then have to come back when the team you're playing has just been parked here in the city for 48 hours. And so I'm thinking, maybe it's not fair to beat up on them if they lose this game tonight. And so that's kind of the mindset I had going into the game. And then the fact that they ran them off the court in the third quarter.
Third quarter was incredible.
I mean, Damian Lillard.
First half had some sketchy moments. Yeah. Third quarter was incredible.
But that's when you would think that they would fall apart, is because their legs would get tired. But if anybody's legs looked tired last night, it looked like Damian Lillard. I mean, he was leaving a lot of shots short last night.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, wait a minute, who's the team that played just, 20 hours ago? This doesn't make any sense.
It was bizarre. I guess, Scotty, that's where we should probably just jump in and get into the starter, because there are a lot of crazy storylines with this Jazz game.
Let's roll. 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
This is Hans and Scotty G.
Let's go!
And now it's time to kick off the show with the biggest topic of the day. This is the starting lineup.
Starting lineup.
Presented by University of Utah Health.
Gotta love it!
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Conley jabs left, goes right, steps into a three, wide open, swish. Mike Conley is really finding that shot off Rudy Gobert as teams for some reason are going under on that pick and roll. Here's Joe, front court, works off the right side of the floor, has Carmelo on him. Torched Carmelo when he was in Oklahoma City. Hand off to O'Neal, fires the three, short. Rebound, tip, Donovan, back to Favors, lays it up and in. Timeout, Terry Stotts. Conley jabs left, goes right, steps into a three, wide open, swish. Mike Conley is really finding that shot off Rudy Gobert as teams for some reason are going under on that pick and roll. Jazz by 20. Left side. O'Neal, top to Ingles, pops out, open three, swish. That one will count in Ron Boone's book.
There you go. David Locke on the call last night. Utah Jazz 122 over Portland 103. There were a couple of things that you and I talked about during the show yesterday going into the game, and then I readdressed it in the pregame show. Number one, I wanted to see more minutes from Joe Ingles and more shots from Joe Ingles. And I hammered that in the pregame show. I said I want to see at least seven shots. I wanted to see four from the perimeter in the first half. He gave five from the perimeter in the first half. He ended up with eight from three. And he didn't have the 50%. He wasn't 4 of 8, but he was 2 of 8. Both of his makes, he was 2 of 4 in the second half.
Yeah.
So two of those makes came in the second half in the third quarter when things really started to move and groove. So I was really happy to see that. Scotty, the other thing that you and I spent a lot of time talking about yesterday was Phoenix and their ability to out-rebound the Jazz. It was one of the biggest out-rebounding discrepancies that the Jazz have faced in a long, long time. Well, the Jazz got their act together, and the second half, Jake and I sat here in studio, and we watched the game together here at Vivint Arena, and there were multiple times we saw guards boxing out, coming in with extra effort to box out. That was emphasized, and the Utah Jazz out-rebounded Portland 58-41 last night. They out-rebounded Portland by a stretch of 17, which was actually a reverse largest discrepancy since I think it was 2019 or something like that, that the Jazz have not out-rebounded a team like that in a long time. So you are absolutely right. Portland had everything going for them. According to multiple NBA publications, they have one of the top three MVP candidates for the 2021 season. They had an extra day of rest. They had a shoot-around. They had it all going for them. And the Utah Jazz came out and out-hustled them on the boards. They were smart with some of their bench usage. It's not like they got any better from the perimeter.
Nope. 12 of 42.
Okay, so if I would have told you the Jazz would be, again, shoot 28% last night against Portland. But I guess if I told you they out-rebounded by 17, yeah, that would make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Jazz had I did not see this number until right now. They had 95 field goal attempts last night. That's obscene.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a high number.
Fun stat for you. Portland has not beat a top four seed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Thought I had a fun fact. I did not.
I think you did have a fun fact.
That is an actual fun fact.
They haven't beaten a top four seed in the West.
Wait a second, because Eric's telling me he did. Was it a good fun fact?
I think it was. It was good. Yeah. I happened to see it on Twitter last night. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because that's probably who they're going to end up playing is a 1, 2, 3, or 4. So, yeah.
Well, it was very impressive last night, Scotty, from so many different angles. And then another thing that we talked about last night is I'm getting so used to watching Donovan Mitchell do what Donovan Mitchell does that in a given night where he's fantastic, sometimes you just take 37 points for granted.
Yeah.
But he was 14 of 25 from the field and ended up with 37 points. He struggled from the perimeter. And, yeah, I want the Jazz to be better from the perimeter. But how nice was it to see the Jazz struggle on the perimeter but still get a win?
Yes, and a win going away, too.
And a win going away. That third quarter was just lights out. It's incredible how exciting this team can be when they really start to hit. But there were some troubling moments last night. Royce O'Neal's offense, the little that you ask of him offensively, and he doesn't have huge offensive requirements. I don't think Quinn has huge offensive expectations for him, but he's 0 of 13 for his last three-point attempts. And last night he was 0 of 2. He has put together a few 0 for games now.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's not like Quinn's like, all right, Royce, we have to get 6 3-point attempts from you every night, and we need you somewhere around that 37-38 percentage. You've got to give us 2 or 3 makes a night. You have to. It's not like he does that. It's just when it pops open and you're in the corner and it comes to you, and that's how the offense works, that's how the blender works. If you can't operate inside that blender offensively just to the demand that we need, then that's a problem. If guys can just leave you hanging in the corner and rotate quicker to Bogdanovich or rotate quicker to Ingles or rotate quicker to Conley and say, well, let's just let him take that corner, then the offense doesn't work the way it's supposed to work. I'm not asking Royce to knock down 4 of 8 or 5 of 8. I'm just asking him when he took 2 last night. I'm just asking him, all right, maybe take 3, maybe take 4, maybe make 1 or 2 of the 4 or 5. That's it. That's all you got to do. Just keep them honest. Keep the defense honest. And right now, if the Jazz were going into a playoff series, Scotty, I think everybody would be testing Royce O'Neal. Everybody would test him. Say, all right, well, let's let that part of the offense fail, and let's make sure the other parts don't get us. And if that one starts cranking, we'll come back to it later. But eventually, it's got to start cranking.
Well, and I'm trying to think where he's at, because he was a near 40% guy, I want to say.
You're darn right he was. In the first 15, 20 games, he led the Jazz in three-point percentage through the first 15 or 20 games. He was at 44 or 45% in the first 15 or 20 games. I remember putting it together. I remember going through all the three-point numbers.
Yeah. Let's see. Right now he is a Royce O'Neal, three-point shooter, he's at 38%, so he's slipped quite a bit. He's still, percentage-wise, he's fifth, sixth on the team. But you're right, he's got, like, he only takes 4 attempts a game from 3.
Yeah, it's not a big number or a big ask.
But it would be nice if that number were to climb a little bit.
I guess I'm being nitpicky on that, and I get it. Bear with me, everybody. I'm being nitpicky because the Jazz are very good, and it's like, all right, well, where do they need to improve? And Royce could do – he could give them a little bit more, and he will. I'm not worried about it. He will. It's in him. It's in his DNA. He's on this 0 of 13 streak. He'll shake it. He'll shake it.
In the course, you know, we talked a little bit about how the Jazz, after two bad three-point shooting nights, saw their three-point shooting drop by a point, almost a full point, which is tough to do when you play 52 games. Two games shouldn't be impacting your overall percentage. But Donovan Mitchell has increased his points per game average nearly 2 points per game higher than where it was just about a week and a half ago.
So what, in five games?
Four games? So he's increased it from about 24, a little over 24 points per game to 26 points a game. Like, it's really remarkable. It's almost as if he's kind of flipped a switch where he's like, okay, this is where I need to be right now. And this is, you know, because some players and some stars kind of, I don't want to say take a back seat, but they pace themselves. And they realize that they need to be playing their best basketball going into the playoffs. And I think Donovan's doing that. I think Donovan's starting to figure out that, okay, now it's time to rise up a little bit and to be a little bit more of a scorer. Not a huge amount, but just a bit more down the stretch and take a little bit of ownership and be playing better basketball and playing high-level basketball going into the playoffs.
And he's done that through minutes distribution. What I'm talking about is his own distribution and production in those minutes. And that is absolutely a self-reflection, and I don't know if the word cognizant decision was made by Donovan of, I'm not just a fourth quarter player, and I can't just be a fourth quarter player.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to be a four quarter player. And last night, I think he took 7 of the first 10 attempts and had 11 points right out of the gates. And
I think 9 out of the first 13.
Yeah, and really just grabbed the moment and went for it. And that's what you want. I don't want him just to be the fourth quarter guy. Like, everybody asked, not everybody, but there's a lot of people that were like, I don't understand why in the closing minutes of regulation against Phoenix, that's when he decides to hit a big three and ignite this team. Why can't he hit a big three in the first quarter that sets the tone? Why can't he hit a big three or a couple big threes before the half that extends the lead from 3 to 9? Why does he wait till the fourth quarter to become, you know, this magical Donovan Mitchell? And I think he's asked himself that. Like, okay, it's time for me to give 4 quarters of this. And to your point, I think that's what he's done. I think that his numbers are reflecting that. And his early performance needs to continue to be what we saw last night.
Yeah. I, like I said, and we said this yesterday, when we opened up the schedule on the second half of the season and we looked at games and the stacking of the games and what they look like, I think we all would have looked at this game and said, that's a loss. And people, like, I tweeted this out last night, people are like, you would have predicted a loss against the Trailblazers? Doesn't have a lot of faith in the team. All right, moron. What I was saying is that there are losses that the schedule maker gives you. And when you're playing 3 out of 4 nights and the third one is at home after playing less than 24 hours and playing Phoenix, and at that point you don't even know that game's going into overtime, that's what we call a schedule loss. I shouldn't have said moron. I apologize.
It's abrasive. Did somebody actually send that to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you understand the point that you're trying to make.
Yeah. The point is that there's, like we said, you know, and Jerry Sloan said this all the time, the schedule maker is going to give you 20 wins, he's going to give you 20 losses. It's what you do with the other 40 that's going to count. Last night, that was a scheduled loss for the Utah Jazz and a scheduled win for Portland. Because Portland's been hanging out here, there's not going to be any altitude issues because they'd been here for a couple days to try to acclimate themselves. So you can't even blame the altitude. The Jazz played the night before an overtime game. This is a game that a lot of times there are people around the league that would have said that if the Jazz would have lost that and been like, it's understandable.
What's crazy is, and I tweeted this last night, it's explained to me, or the way I look at it, that this Portland game, out of the last 3 games they played, this Portland game could be argued as the most difficult.
Yes.
Even though it was at home, it could be argued as the most difficult because you got an MVP candidate and all those things that we've explained, the road, the trip, being in your bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and having to wake up and play a game that night. All those things led to that being the most difficult matchup. I would have looked at this and said, the Jazz in this 3-game stretch, probably maybe 2-1,
yeah,
with the wins being Dallas and Phoenix. And the loss being Portland, I didn't expect a complete reversal of this. That does tell me that this team's got tenacity. You know, the other thing it tells me, this team has self-awareness. Because remember, we talked yesterday, and I said, no, I see why this could be a scheduled loss, but let me tell you why this game is so important that win.
That's what we did, too.
And remember, Mike Conley doesn't play on the back end of back-to-backs or the front end, vice versa. But Mike Conley played against Phoenix. They find out Jordan Clarkson's out. Mike Conley's ready to go. Well, there's a reason for that. They weren't about to put themselves in a three-game losing streak against three of the Western Conference contenders. They weren't about to do that. And that's why Donovan engaged early. And that's why guards blocked out. And that's why rebound discrepancy moved from opponent over to Jazz side. And that's why the third quarter was a 40-19. How often do you see a 40-19?
I mean, you see 40-point quarters, but you don't see a 21-point discrepancy in a quarter.
No. Oh. Very, very rarely. I wonder how many 21-point advantage quarters have even been held this year in the NBA.
Not a lot. I can't imagine many.
Can't imagine.
Frankly, and I'm not going to lie, I actually believe if there, and I don't know what the count would be, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Jazz had a majority of those. Because it always seems like there's that second or third quarter. I mean, even, like, go back to the interview with Joe Ingles this morning when he was on with DJ and PK. He's like, yeah, you know, I feel like we're playing pretty well. And I look up the scoreboard. We're up 2-3 points. And I'm, like, thinking, wow, this should be more. And then, you know, 2 or 3 minutes later, you know, I look up and the next time out, we're up 20. Which, by the way, always amazes me because I've heard players say that they're just not – you know, in the course, especially if there's no dead balls and there's like, you know, a 3 or 4 minute stretch.
And it's just rolling. Yeah.
And it makes sense. But, you know, because we're all at home and we see the scoreboard, you know, affixed, we always know what the score is. But you forget that the players are out there just playing and they're just so focused on what they're doing. And then they go to a timeout. They look up like, oh, look, we're up by 15 right now.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
What's your guys' feeling when they went up, when they pulled within one before half, but then they let Damian Lillard go down and hurry up and score?
I was worried
and
about it.
And they were down three going into halftime.
I was worried about it. Like, that first half had so many different sketchy moments. It's like, uh-oh.
Well, I'm not – I mean, I'll even take it a step further in the fourth quarter when they take that 21-point lead down to 12. And I'm thinking, boy, Damian's going to go off, and this is going to be a tight one. And the Jazz take it.
Tapping his watch.
And they push it right back to 21.
Yeah.
And you know who hit the big shot there was Gorgeous Georges.
Yeah.
Who hit the big straightaway three to push it from 12 to 15, and then after that, it was done.
He did. Gorgeous Georges had the best plus-minus of the night, plus 20.
Attaboy.
And he was 2 of 5, our guy Gorgeous Georges, my partner in crime with Larry H. Miller Used Car Supermarket. And I love seeing him play well. He's a big body. And Jake was pointing out things last night in the postgame, talking about his drive and aggression to get into position defensively. And you can see he's putting the effort out there.
Yeah.
He's still not he knows this. He's not the fastest guy laterally in the NBA. So he tries to be smart and get himself to position before the attack comes. But you're right. That shot by George was awesome. There was a rebound put back by Rudy Gobert.
Oh.
That was brutal.
I know exactly what
and angry.
Yeah.
And a game changer and electrifying. Hey, so Scotty, that's 23 straight wins at home for the Jazz. 23 straight wins. How much of that do you think is the Jazz kind of being on the front edge of fans being allowed back in the arena?
I think there's a slight bit of that, but I don't know if it's that much. I think I don't think it's all fans in the stands. I think it's just this is a really good team, and they're an elite-level team at home. And I can't really wrap my arms around what it is. It's probably a combination of a lot of things, but, I mean, this is going down as one of the more, you know, Golden State was just ridiculous during their stretch. I think they won like 56 straight home games during the when they were winning titles.
Mm-hmm.
But this Jazz team just continues to rack up win after win after win after win.
They do, man. At home.
Yep. All right. Hans and Scotty here on the Zone Sports Network. Andrew Reinhart, kind enough to join us from Wasatch Medical. Andrew, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you guys today?
Man, we're doing better now that we get a chance to chat with you, because you're changing people's lives out there. If there are people out there struggling with ED and you think, well, it might be some injections or surgery, or I might have to go the little blue pill, that's not the case anymore.
That is not the case. There is a huge transition going on right now from pill to the acoustic wave therapy. Wasatch Medical uses the two most advanced versions. And what's been kind of cool, maybe I guess it's kind of sad too, is younger guys coming in and saying, look, I've been suffering in silence. I don't want to deal with this anymore. I can't perform in the bedroom like I should be able to. I'm in my 30s or I'm in my 40s. They go through these treatments, and what a difference. Not have to take the pill. It opens up the blood vessels enough that they get back to those younger years. We've helped so many guys, and there's no need to suffer in silence anymore. This has a huge impact on the relationship, and the acoustic wave therapy can be a great alternative if you're frustrated.
801-901-8000, that's the number to call. And the most important thing, Andrew, and I love that you do this, you offer up a free assessment so guys can actually find out where they're at.
Yeah, this is a great step in determining if you're a good candidate. If your ED is a blood flow problem, and you may just come in and take a lot of free and not do the treatments, it's no problem. But at least take the first step and see if this will work for you. Call us now. The assessment, the exam, the blood flow ultrasound, that's really cool, by the way, is free. That's with our medical doctor. A little gift that produces immediate results in the bedroom. You'll love that. And new patients even get free testosterone right now. So a whole lot of free. Give us a call. We'll get you set up.
801-901-8000. It's all right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Joined now by Craig Bowlerjack, TV voice of the Utah Jazz. And we're also seeing these teams get up for the Jazz. I mean, how else do you explain Dallas beating the Jazz and being brilliant and then losing to the Rockets and sucking so completely?
To be respected at the highest of levels is knowing now that you are targeted. This is a good team, and there's all-stars for a reason. I give credit to the Jazz. I thought they played hard. Second half, entertaining. Yeah, they just couldn't get it done in overtime. They'll figure it out. People get panicky because there's a lot of hype and a lot of expectations, but still a lot of basketball to be played.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Rough news, DMX has passed away. Was in a coma for the last week or so and passed away this morning.
My goodness, man. So... I'm just going down the list here of early deaths on, you know, legendary rappers. You and I always talk about Tupac and the Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah.
But you throw in Nipsey Hussle, who was targeted in a shooting.
Yes.
And, you know, you throw in DMX, and you could probably go down a list of, I'm just looking at this list, but I don't.
DMX was, I mean, I don't want to say he was old because he's, I think, our age.
He's 50. He was about 50, 51.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he's up there a second.
Oh, good. Whoa. Then he's old. And
he broke it. He broke out a little late. It just takes me back to like 1998, 99, listening to this on my way to college down in St. George.
I'm going to go through a list of rappers that passed away young, okay? Yeah. King Von passed away at 26 years old on November 6, 2020. Pop Smoke passed away at 20 years old, was shot in an apparent home invasion in the Hollywood Hills, 4:30 o'clock in the morning on February 19, 2020. Triple X Tentaction.
Wait a minute. That was the whole name?
Yeah.
Triple X Tentaction?
Yeah. Triple X Tentaction.
The Tonka.
No. Tentaction. 20 years old.
No.
45.
Mac Miller, 26 years old.
Yeah, that one's no good.
ODB.
Oh, yeah.
You remember ODB?
When did we lose ODB?
Lost it's ODB in 2004.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
At the Wu-Tang's recording studios. He was pronounced dead less than an hour after his collapse. No, it's not. Eazy-E died young, 31 years old. Big L, 24 years old. And then Nipsey Hussle was the biggest one. I guess I didn't realize how big of an influence Nipsey Hussle was. Did you guys? I mean,
no.
I think Jordan Clarkson got him tattooed on his shoulder. Is it Jordan that has him tattooed on his shoulder?
That sounds right. I think so.
And there were multiple athletes. I think LeBron may have tattooed him. Anyways, Nipsey Hussle. And then, so you throw in Biggie and Tupac. Okay, so.
Remember last year, Lloyd, we lost Bushwick Bill.
I don't even want to talk about it. You're going to bring me down.
I know, right?
Don't do that.
Yeah. 2019, we lost him.
The guy you don't want to lift.
No. No, you do not. Huh.
Okay. All right.
That was just last year?
2 years ago.
So would he have been our age?
He was born in 1966.
Okay, Lloyd, Scotty, I'm going to pose this question to you. You're going to be dead by 36 years old, but you get to live the rapper's life from 19 to 36.
So 17 good years of just...
17 years of the rapper's life. Music videos and all the dollars, and you own a couple jets and...
But do the dollars have to be gone? Like DMX, no, the dollars...
The dollars...
You know, hang on to the dollars for your family?
Yes,
like
the
that?
Dollars that...
Ooh. 36 is so...
But I'll also say this...
I like, would already been dead for like... 5 years.
Yeah, you'd be dead for 5 years. It's a short life, man. Yeah. It's really sad because, like, I think about how much joy. Look, there's a lot of discomfort that comes with getting into your 40s, but there's a lot of joy that.
Amen to that.
There's a lot of joy that comes
a lot of
with
joint discomfort.
you're talking about.
Is that a medical marijuana reference?
No, just no joint. Like, yeah. The body aches, arthritis, you know?
I thought you were going.
You know, back in
Waylon Jennings on me.
And back in 2013, DMX filed for bankruptcy, having incurred about $10 million worth of debt. His net worth in 2013 was $50,000. He had $50,000 in assets.
That just makes me sick to my stomach, like really sick to my
stomach. Now, that was 8 years ago, so I don't know. Maybe he was able to.
The guy that brought us, I'm going to lose my mind up in here. Had $50,000 left in 2013.
And actually now, granted, this is just a Google search. DMX net worth is actually less than zero in 2021 because of debt issues.
I think it's like negative $1 million.
Oh, no. Oh, that makes
yeah, I don't think you want any part of that estate.
Lloyd, what is it that got him?
Well, he was in a coma. He was getting no brainwaves. He had an overdose, and yeah, he was in a coma. He was kind of in a vegetative state.
Yeah, that's crazy. By the way, nobody can persuade me otherwise. Tupac's the greatest rapper in the history of rap, period.
More so than Biggie?
Yes.
Okay, I mean, you're more than entitled to have that opinion. I will not share any of that with you because I do not feel like I am in any way, shape, or form in a position.
I think our guy, Tony Jones, is losing his mind listening to this right now.
Why?
Because I think he's a big Biggie guy.
Well, I guess we can all have our opinion, but Tupac, it was really the only rap artist I knew or listened to a lot. And that was
same
right about 1996 when I left the nest.
Yeah.
But there you go. Some bad news coming in.
You hear that DMX stuff, though, and it just makes you want to shift your arm up and down.
Yeah, it does. Put it on for us, man. It's a Friday. It's a Friday. People are headed to work. You know, they're having a good time. Look, he's gone, but he's not forgotten.
Yeah, you're hard-pressed not to hear this song and be like, all right, today's going to be a good day.
I'd love to leave a legacy like this. That's the worst dance move.
Okay, calm down, Pitbull.
Let's go, man. It's Friday.
Maybe Pitbull was inspired by this. So you'd had some concerns about the Jazz. I think we all had. With that said, do you feel a little bit more at ease after what we saw last night against the Portland Trail Blazers team? Keep in mind, that's a Trail Blazer team that's not a good rebounding team. It's an awful defensive team. And the Jazz were able to take advantage on both sides. Offense was clicking, and defensively, and they were able to rebound the heck out of it.
Yeah, specifically in the third quarter, what was it that you saw in the third quarter that just changed and shifted? Was it just them hitting the perimeter that opened up all kinds of doors? Because the first half, they were 21 or 22% through parts of the first half.
I think they forced Portland into be one-dimensional. Forced Damian Lillard to play some hero ball, and sometimes he can, but Lillard didn't have a shot. And when it wasn't falling for him, and the Jazz locked out everybody else, and it just, you know, in that Phoenix game, it just kind of felt like every 50-50 ball went Phoenix way. And last night against the Jazz, especially in that third quarter, when, you know what, there's an opportunity for an offensive rebound for Portland, and it gets tipped out, and it gets a Jazz player right in stride, and he's going the other way. And so it just kind of felt like, It was the Jazz night. The hustle was there. The 50-50 balls kind of went their way. And it was just it was their night.
Well,
frankly, I thought they got a lot of good calls, too.
So going into it, I had an idea of watching the Jazz. I wanted to see the Jazz, what they were doing away from the ball. And I wanted to take a look and see what their effort level would be off the board. So I watched a lot of the Jazz. But another thing that I had in my notes going into that game, wanting to watch closely, was Norman Powell's effect on this Portland Trailblazers team. Because Norman Powell had like 32 or 34 points a couple of nights ago in his third or fourth game with the Portland Trailblazers. He's probably averaging 20 to 22 points a game right now with Portland. And Norman Powell came in and was pretty invisible. He ended up scoring 13 points. He was 4-10 on the night, 40% from the field. But he was not the difference that I thought he might be against the Jazz. Thinking about Powell, McCollum, and Lillard on the court together kind of makes me nervous. But the Jazz did a fantastic job of bottling him up and forcing McCollum into really bad looks, taking care of Lillard when they needed to. McCollum was the worst plus-minus on the night. He ended up with minus 19 on the night.
Yeah,
he couldn't get anything going. He was 8 of 21 last night. Now, Damian was 8 of 21, too. These guys were 16 of 42 combined. And a lot of that has to do with what I believe was a mindful effort by the Utah Jazz to make it miserable and not lose a third in the row.
Yeah. Yep. This team, I mean, look, the way this team talked in the postgame was the way the Phoenix talked in their postgame. We had to win this game. This game was important. Donovan Mitchell, look, we don't lose two in a row, let alone three in a row. This wasn't going to happen tonight. That urgency was incredible. And there's a cool little clip on the Jazz account, and I think it was meant just to be kind of a fun, like, oh, look how Donovan, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. Donovan walks off the court, and he looks up at the crowd, he's waving at the crowd, and he just goes, now I can go get some sleep, now I can go rest. And I think there's a lot of, like, I think it was fun, like, okay, that's a kind of a fun little moment where he's like, oh boy, now I can rest up. But I think it's true. Like, I think he's looking at, like, oh man, finally. Because this has been a rough stretch. I'm going to go to bed, and I'm not going to wake up for a while.
Well, good news for him. He's got kind of a cake stretch that's now put in front of him. And I don't know what's going to happen with the Lakers, but this is what you've got. You've got Sacramento tomorrow. You've got the Wizards on Monday. And we'll see what the Wizards show up and try to do here at Vivint Arena. But you've got the next three games the next four games are at home. Sacramento, Washington, Oklahoma City, and Indiana. Those are all very winnable games. You should avenge the loss you had against Washington. You should be able to hold Oklahoma City down. And then you got those two Lakers games on the road, back-to-back. Yep. At Los Angeles Lakers, at Los Angeles Lakers, April 17th and April 19th. And I don't think that they're going to have their team out there. So you look at this stretch, four games at home. You have one back-to-back, Washington and Oklahoma City. You've got a couple of nights of rest. This is a very doable stretch for the Jazz before they finally get back to Phoenix. April 30th, a rematch against the Phoenix Suns. In fact, when you look at the schedule here, Scotty and I, we knew that this schedule was going to be advantageous for the Utah Jazz, but this is just first look. The only playoff teams that you've got left, can you pull up the standings? The only playoff teams that you got left that should be manned, fully manned. You know what? I guess we'll include the Lakers.
Okay.
Let's include the Lakers, even though they're not going to be fully manned. So you've got the Lakers twice.
Yep.
Phoenix.
Correct.
Toronto's currently out of the top eight, right?
Yeah, they're 11th in the East.
Where's San Antonio?
San Antonio is ninth.
Okay, they're out of it.
Well, I don't know. They'll be part of that.
The play-in.
The play-in.
Would you include them in a playoff, or would you include them in a seeded game, the two San Antonio games?
I'll leave them out.
Okay, Denver.
Yeah, obviously.
Is Golden State currently out of the eight?
Golden State's the 10th.
All right, and Portland. That's it. You've got five games left against current slotted playoff teams.
That's impressive.
Five games out of 20 remaining, I think.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. What you may have missed coming up next right here on the Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show. The Big Show. With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
Sam Amick with us from The Athletic, working on the free agency files. Who's going to possibly be out there? Somebody on your list is Mike Conley. What kind of market might await him if he chooses to test it?
Mike has made it real clear he wants to re-sign in Utah. The Jazz have a chance here with Mike to have, I think, a run at title contention for the next several years. It would seemingly be a no-brainer, but signing Mike to a big-time deal is going to put them deep into the luxury tax. That's the only if to me. I'm not hearing any noise as of yet about Mike looking at greener pastures. But that being said, it's free agency. The way he's shooting the ball, the way he's still showing that he can play at a high level, I mean, Mike certainly is going to get plenty of attention.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7, presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust, on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
What you may have missed right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Bob Casper will join us coming up in about 10 minutes from right now, where he can tell you how much better at barbecue he is than I am. He likes to rub my nose in it
a little bit.
Oh, hey, hold on. I got a little bit of breaking news for Lloyd that Hans did not share with us. Hold on here. Let me pull up this picture that was sent to me yesterday. Was that about 2 yards away on a par 3, 170?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, where are you going
about
here?
About 3 feet, 3.5 feet.
Attaboy.
It rolled. It was
right
a one,
by it.
175. Kevin said that to you. Did Kevin also send to you the scorecard?
No, he did not. He just said your guy almost knocked in a hole in one from 170 yards.
Kevin was one under on the front nine.
Oh, it's his handicap.
At the very first hole, Kevin goes birdie. I went triple bogey. And, you know, that's not a good way to start a competitive match.
Been there.
And I'm like, oh, man, well, I'm sure things will get better. And then he ends up birdieing, and then I think he may have bogeyed one, but ended up at one under through nine. We did tie on the back nine, so – both hit 42 on the back nine. He's just really good. He doesn't use a driver either.
Oh, really?
No, doesn't even have it in his bag.
Wow.
It's all three wood. He's got a three wood that he puts a draw on, and he puts it at 235, 240 almost every time off the box. And it's a really nice rollout draw. It's not like a accidental draw. And it's like he's shaping shots, man.
That's tough to compete with.
What's funny is,
by the way, we're talking about Kevin White. He does the color work with me on the Utah State football broadcast. Former Aggie quarterback, was a JC All-American at Snow College.
He's just the best.
And by the way, like, he's really good at a lot of things, and he's really smart, great broadcaster. The thing that drives you nuts about him is that he's like, nobody should be that nice. Like, he's the nicest dude on the planet.
Love him. He's just
like almost to be like, that's not real. Like, nobody's that nice. And he is. Like, he's literally the most kind-hearted person I've ever met.
And he beat me up and down. But yeah, that was close. It was really
close. But he is a competitor,
close.
Though. Like, he wants to compete.
We watched it land. We saw it track. And I'm talking, it was headed right at the pin. And
you just haven't had one yet, have you?
No.
Have you had one yet?
No. Either is he.
Was so bad.
He hasn't had one.
No.
Really?
You haven't had one, Lloyd?
Nope. Closest I came was what was that par three at Bountiful Ridge, the longer one, number 15.
Not the one with the big drop?
No. Actually, it's that long one right by the bathroom.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah,
the one by the bathroom. Yeah. I was literally like inches away from it on the other side.
That'd be nice to snag one at Bountiful Ridge.
Oh, I know, but no, that's as close as I've ever come.
Man, it would be nice just to get a hole in one.
Just want one. Just want to feel the good life.
Was that a wrestling mat?
Yeah, they were having a wrestling match outside. I don't know, for COVID reasons. So they put the mats outside, and the wind blew and picked up the mat and put it right on top of the wrestlers.
Flipped it over them. It's just funny, Scotty. It's funny because mental warfare in golf is different than mental warfare in contact sports.
Yeah.
Because I know, being bigger and trained in contact sports, whether it's, you know, wrestling or some forms of mixed martial arts, certainly wrestling and definitely football, I can control my situation. But when I'm watching a guy go birdie and shape a shot and chip from 120 to within 8 feet, it's like, I don't have a chance. But then you're thinking, okay, well, I'll get back into this. And then you're messing up your shot because you're trying to overhit to get yourself in position. Golf is a mental beast.
Yeah. It's not like you can go over there and break his arm or anything.
No.
Well, you could.
I think I could.
If you hit this chip shot, I will break your arm.
Like, I'm going to fight like a pit bull to do it. You just threaten him?
Yeah.
Now, when you say I'm going to fight like a pit bull, I just see you pumping your arms going at him.
I'm going to pit bull you.
So anyway, congratulations, though. I mean, it's a heck of a shot.
It was.
You hit the birdie putt, right?
Yeah, did. Okay. And it was
because I guarantee, like we said, Kevin's a nice guy. Kevin still made you putt that out.
He did.
Oh yeah, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, he did. He did. He's a blast to play golf with. But I hope everybody's enjoying Augusta right now and enjoying the Masters. I was watching a little bit of the coverage this morning. The scores are really wonky right now. It's not my favorite thing, what I'm seeing. I don't like that Rose is 7 under and everybody else is like plus
we
8.
We might all. And he's not, by the way, anymore. He's 4 under right now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's come down.
Yeah, he came
down.
But
I'm telling you, we might all have a golfer that might be out of the cut.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Who's mine?
Let's see. You have.
I know DJ was plus 3 after the first day.
Okay, so DJ's plus 2. He's plus 2. So he's on the.
Finau's in the red now, right?
Finau is. This great radio.
Where did you have
there
the cut?
Is, 1 under.
Where did you have the cut line at, Lloyd?
The cut line is.
Gonna be about
it's going to be plus 3.
Plus 3?
Woo!
There's a couple of guys. Like, I mean, Dustin Johnson's right there could fall out.
How's your boy Schauffele doing?
He's even at least.
All right.
Is he?
He hasn't gone out yet. He's even.
Scotty's other guy is, he's got Schauffele.
Lee Westwood has not gone out yet.
Scotty, you got Schauffele?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just meant it's Lloyd's favorite golfer.
I haven't had him the last couple times.
Lloyd, where's Justin Thomas?
He's at even, last I saw.
See, I'm
even on the day.
No, none of us took Rose, right?
None of us took Rose.
I'm in jeopardy with DeChambeau.
Yeah, you're right there with me with Lee Westwood.
I think he's going to collapse.
Yeah. man.
I could see Bryson not making the cut. Hey, and guess what? We're going to have some epic collapse. That cut line is going to give us a plus 12, I'll bet.
Yeah.
We'll see a two-day collapse by somebody. It'll be a plus 12.
Yep. Yep. All right, 11 o'clock straight up. Speaking of the Masters, we'll chat with Bob Casper.
Oh, I wanted to give a quick update on what you may have missed.
Oh, sure.
You remember the referee, Bert Smith, that collapsed?
Oh, yeah.
During the Gonzaga-USC game? I'm sure most people out there that were watching the NCAA tournament saw it. An official just collapsed on the court backwards. It ended up being a blood clot in his lung, Scotty. And he made a comment today. He said, that fall in that moment probably saved my life. He said, you don't know where that clot was going next. He was just released from the hospital. He said, it puts in perspective the value of each day because we all go through our lives. We're all guilty and we just live. But do we say, I love you enough? Do we give an extra hug enough? Do we do things to please our family and our friends enough? Said, when you live through something like that, it puts it all in perspective. He thought he was not going to make it. A lot of people thought he was not going to make it. That was a crazy moment, watching him just collapse on the court. But he is going to make a full recovery.
97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, 11 o'clock straight up. Hans and Scotty, that's great to hear, because yeah, that was a scary moment.
It was.
We'll talk to Bob Casper next right here on The Zone Sports Network.